comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks. Welcome to the show, whoever you are, wherever you are. Let's see if we can get that stopped. That was not supposed to happen. Weird stuff happens once in a while when I go in and fool around with the software, and then I forget to put it all back like it was. Anyway, welcome to the show. I'm glad you're here. I hope you've had a great weekend and a great day, and we're going to do our best to make sure this is a great day with talk radio like nowhere else on earth. It's the show where you matter. I had an interesting thing happen over the weekend. You probably have had this happen to you before, where someone somewhere puts a charge on either your credit card or your debit card, and you have no idea who they are. You didn't authorize it. And sometimes mistakes happen. It's a computer error, and you get it all taken care of. There is a company. Well, I woke up on May the 16th to discover, because I check every day, to discover that a company that I had never heard of had charged my debit card $100. Now, for some of you, $100 means nothing. For me, it means everything. That is huge money for me. But I know for some of you, you might think, well, no big deal. It's a huge deal for the Kevin Smith Show. And so the name of this company is Batelco Prepaid Calling Cards. They are from Nassau, Bahamas. So I called the debit card company, and they explained to me that this charge was pending. And while it's pending, I can't dispute it. I have to dispute it after it's complete, which I thought was preposterous. But anyway, that's the way they did it. But they said, do you want their telephone number? I said, yes. So they gave me a telephone number that is attached to this charge. Well, I called the telephone number, and these people, it was not Batelco. It was a company called Cellular Abroad. And they didn't show any charges in my name or on the card. And they explained to me that they simply are sales agents for some of the products of Batelco. So they gave me Batelco's number. I called Batelco and down in the Bahamas. Batelco, the operator, transferred me to a non-existent extension number. So I called back. And I explained what she had done, and she said, oh, okay. And I told her what I was calling about, and so she said, well, let me connect you with our fraud department. So they connected me with the fraud department. The fraud department told me there was nothing they could do about it until after I faxed some information to them. And I said, look, I don't have a fax machine. How about I email it? Nope, you have to fax it. Well, as you know, I also don't have a car. For me to get to a fax machine, I have to spend $20 to $25 for a taxi to get to a fax machine that I'm going to have to pay to use. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I said, you know, if I'm going to have to pay for a taxi, I'll just take the taxi and go down to the FBI. I'll tell you the rest of the story when we come back. Check your bills. Check your cards. See if you got anything on there from Batelco. If you didn't authorize it, you might want to check into it. We'll be back right after this. Well, let me quickly tell you the rest of that story, and then we'll bring our guest on. Anyway, they refused to do any kind of work with me at all on this unauthorized charge on my card by their company, unless I faxed it. So I said, okay, well, I tell you what, if I'm going to spend that kind of money, you know, for a taxi and everything, I'll just use it and go down to the FBI. We'll let them deal with you. And then she started saying something about threats, that I'm making threats. And I said, oh, no, no, this is not a threat. I said, in fact, I'll promise you, if I don't get my money back, the FBI is going to go through you. But let me promise you something else. I'm going to make you famous tonight. So check your check all your credit cards, check your debit cards, and if you see a charge on there by BATELCO, by Telco, if you didn't order something from them, then you need to get in touch with them. And in fact, you can email me, and I'll give you their fraud number, and you can give them a call and have the same joy I had. But when you steal $100 from me, and then you tell me that I'm threatening you by telling you I want it back, I'll make you famous. That's what you get for your $100. I will make you famous. Okay. Let me ask you a question, ladies and gentlemen. Do you know what the word cryptozoology means? We use it all the time. People talk about cryptozoology and cryptids. Do you know what it means? Well, my guest this evening is into cryptozoology. His name is Alex Hearn, and he is the director of the Arizona Cryptozoology Research Organization. Alex, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, Kevin. Pleasure to be here. It's an honor to be here.
You know, I wondered, Alex, when I first talked to you on the telephone and I heard your accent, I thought that sounds like Boston. But I didn't say anything. But I thought, you know, it sounds like Boston. When I read your bio, I realized that you spent a lot of time, you basically kind of grew up in that area of the country and spent a lot of time in that area of the country. So let me ask you a very simple question. Did someone lie to you or something to get you to come to Arizona?
Yeah, they did. They told me that, you know, it was a beautiful place and there was lots of things to do here. No, that's exactly what they told me, and that's when I wanted to come. I always dreamed of being out here near the Grand Canyon and in the Grand Canyon, and as soon as I moved out here, I started to explore this state, and I've been lucky enough to go lots of places that regular people don't always get to go, maybe just because they wouldn't find out about. No place that you couldn't go if you tried, but I've been lucky enough to be invited to a lot of different locations in all, basically all four corners of the state, although I haven't made it much past Gila Bend, so I guess the southwest part of the state I can't actually claim yet, only to Gila Bend.
Well, you know, I say things about it, but obviously I'm here, so I must not hate it. It's just I can't figure out why. Look, you go just a little bit north of here, and it's absolutely gorgeous. I mean, you get into the mountains, you get into the pine forests, you get into the, in the wintertime, into the snow. And it's just paradise, just a little bit north of the Phoenix area. And why I settled in the Dust Bowl, I don't know, but I did. And, you know, this is the northern suburbs of hell in the summertime, but, and we're headed into that, but it's been a pretty reasonable day here weather-wise today. Okay. Let me ask you to tell everybody what this big word means, cryptozoology.
Well, the simplest answer and the easiest answer is the study of the unknown. But basically, it's the study of unknown animals. usually, right? And mm-hmm. when we refer to cryptids, we're referring to those animals or those creatures, you know. And I think some people stretch it and include aliens and ghosts, and some people try to stick more scientific towards, and not that those subjects aren't scientific, but trying to stick more towards just the animals and nature. And but basically it's just the study of unknown animals.
And, well, you know, and there are some things that are known, they get thrown in there as well, but with good reason. For instance, the so-called Tasmanian tiger. This is supposed to be an extinct animal, and yet there are some reports in Australia and in, I guess, Tasmania. There are reports of people seeing them out in the wild. So in that sense, since it's supposed to be extinct, I believe it was 1908 when the last one died in captivity. But I could have that date wrong, but somewhere along in there. Okay, so now if someone says they see one out in the wild, that kind of gets thrown into cryptozoology as well, because it's not supposed to be.
Right, right. Now, they have different ways of figuring extinct sometimes. Sometimes they get below 50 creatures and they consider that extinct, in that they'll never be able to find them in such a vast area. So I wonder if they ever actually were all, you know, killed off, died in captivity, or eradicated.
Well, you know, if people are seeing them, then obviously some survived in the wild. But officially, the last pair were in a zoo in Australia, and they died in captivity, and that was supposed to be it. There are no more officially, and yet people report seeing them. But, you know, years ago, decades ago, a very, very great, in my estimation, explorer by the name of Thor Heyerdahl set out to prove that Polynesian people could have traveled, or people, let's put it this way, people could have traveled between South America and the Polynesian islands on rafts made of balsa wood. And so he made a raft of balsa wood, and he made the trip successfully. But one morning when he woke up on the raft, laying up on the raft, was a fish that had flopped up there during the night, and it was an allegedly extinct for several million years. They called it a snake fish, but it had a had an official name, but it was supposed to be extinct. And then, you know, the coelacanth fish is supposed to be extinct, but people catch them. Fishermen catch them in their nets. So the reason I say all of that is because whenever we here in the United States, and pretty much it's true in Australia, when we talk about cryptids, we talk about cryptozoology, people think Bigfoot. And when they think Bigfoot, a lot of times the official stance is it's just not possible for any great primate to exist, and we wouldn't know about it. And yet there are examples of animals that we thought were extinct and now know to be living. So with that kind of as a starting point, now let me ask you this. What is it, just briefly, what is it that drove you into an interest in investigating cryptozoology?
Well, I guess, you know, you already know the answer.
You're sounding very muffled right now.
Oh, how's this? Is that better?
Much better.
Yep. I think you already know the answer. It's something that happened to me in 1973. I was 12 years old. I was out hunting with my father. And up in New Hampshire, the dogs, they do have a leash law, even in the country. And you're supposed to keep your dogs on the leash. But it's especially important out in the forest, believe it or not. The one place where you think your dogs could be off the leash, they really can't. And the reason is, it's legal up there during hunting season or any other time, or at least it used to be, to shoot the dogs. Because what the dogs will do is they run down the deer and the other animals like the deer, and they kill them. So the hunters, the people out in the forest, the dogs are a no-no. At least not trained and not, with their owner on a leash. So we were hunting, and we had been up there going up into the area for a long time, and I say in that my father and his buddy had been going there a long time. I had only been with them 2, 3, 4 times at this stage. And we're hunting for, you go up for 4 days, and second, third day, no action. And we've been at this breakfast shack and lunch shack where we've been eating all our meals near the hotel. And my dad and his friend were pretty friendly with the owners. And they're asking them, how you doing every day when they come back. And they said, you got to go over by our house. We live on Forest Road over here, and we're the last house on the Forest Road, and you can park right at our house, and you can hike in there, and that's where you should go tomorrow. So the next day, and I remember it as a Thursday, that's what we did. We had breakfast. They owned the restaurant, so the husband cooked the breakfast, the wife served us the breakfast. And we had our breakfast, and we drove to their house. And I don't remember how long it was, but, somewhere up in the White Mountains in New Hampshire. And we parked at their house, and their oldest daughter or someone at the house came out and introduced herself. And my dad told her, who told her who we were. And they had a bunch of dogs. And the dogs and a couple of puppies, I was, 12 years old, loved animals. They started playing with me. So my father said his goodbyes, and we left. Well, sure enough, the dog, the mother dog, and the two puppies started following us. And they followed us in for, 2-3 miles. And the whole way, my dad's harping on me, don't let those dogs follow you. What are you doing? And, I couldn't control him. I didn't want him to follow me. I didn't want my father to yell at me. He could get a little intense at times, And so they followed us. And I heard the whole way in, heard Dad talking. Finally, I'm like, Dad, if you want, I'll take him back to the truck. Just, I'll be fine. It was an easy hike in. It was a different time than today. Maybe today you wouldn't let your 12-year-old hike out of the forest, but he did, and he was pretty cautious with me too, so it wasn't like something he'd normally do. It considered pretty safe up there. The one thing that the locals in the restaurant had been scaring me with was the ocelots and the lynx and the local cats up there, and telling me they jump out of the trees and jump on your back. So I kept an eye out for that,
I guess so.
But they were just teasing me. I don't think you really ever see anything like that. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So I start my hike back, and the dogs are playing and hiking along with me, and we're mostly on a deer path through the briars, but, it's a pretty good path. And we're walking, and the dogs are following, and after a little ways, they kept stopping. And they'd look back, and they're all three of them stopped, and they're looking into my back right. And, after a while, I'm getting a little perturbed because, the slower you go, the colder you are. And I just, come on, let's go, and trying to get them to go. Now I'm getting nervous, you know, thinking about what my father said, if they get lost, it's my fault and all this stuff. And he doesn't want to deal with the people if we lose their dogs and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm trying to get the dogs to follow me, and they'd come for a little bit, then they'd stop. They'd come for a little bit, then they'd stop. And then I realized that they're looking at something, and I realized I could kind of hear it, too. So I'd start walking, and I'd stop, and I'd start walking, and I'd stop, and I'd hear, you know, something following me. And I could hear twigs breaking and something pushing through the twigs. And it sounded big, and it sounded like footfalls, but my dad was going the other way. And, you know, at this point, it could have been him checking up on me, but I didn't really think it was. And he wouldn't check up on me enough to walk through the briars. He'd walk down the path.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, after a while, I'd try to get the dogs to move a little faster, and I'd move a little bit, and I'd hear a good branch break. So I knew that I wasn't hearing things, you know. It took me a while to realize what was going on, and I would stop, and whatever it was would stop. And finally, I got, after doing this, you know, for like two, three miles, I got within eyeshot of the opening in the tree line that I knew the forest road was up ahead of me. And it was a mountain forest road, so the path I was going to run out, was going to come out on, I'm going to have to turn right to go down this forest road. And whatever's following me is behind me and to the right. So I'm already thinking, what am I going to do when I get out there? But I get within eyeshot of the tree line break, and I start running for my life. And the dogs start falling behind me, but, you know, the mother dog's waiting for the puppies, and they couldn't keep up with me, and I'm, you know, going as fast as a little 12-year-old scared out of his life can go. And whatever was following me starts really going too. And there's branches and twigs breaking and crunching, and I mean, it's keeping up with me through the forest, and I'm on a path.
All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll come back and get the rest of that story on the other side of this break. We're talking with Alex Hearn, who is the director of the Arizona Cryptozoology Research Organization. I'll get it right in a minute. Alex, you were just clearing the woods, and this thing was running right along at the same pace. Are you with us, Alex? Well, apparently Alex is no longer with us. Okay, well, we'll try to get him back on the telephone, and that's a little bit odd, but we'll see if we can get him back on the telephone. And the phone is ringing, and we will see if we have him back on the line here momentarily. All right, Alex, you were just telling us about clearing the woods and headed for the road, running, and you could hear these footsteps running right apace with you.
Geez, I didn't even realize we got disconnected. I'm sorry, I was on hold. Yes, so I started running towards the tree line. I hit the forest road. I turned to my right down the hill. I thought for sure this thing is going to come crashing out of the woods and get me, and it never did. It stopped right there. I ran down the hill. The forest road bent to the left and then doubled back basically on itself, you know, at another level. Never even thinking that whatever it is could just run straight across through the woods a little bit and pop out on the forest road where I'm going to be now. And I got down to that point, and I thought for sure it was going to come out. Never even realized the dogs weren't with me anymore. The dogs popped out through the woods there. They knew, you know, that was the shorter way to their house. It wasn't hard terrain. I probably could have ran that way, too, but I was thinking of getting to that road.
Did you ever see, did you ever catch sight of what it was that was crashing through the trees?
No. And the brush, you know, it's the forest, but it's winter.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one of the days prior, I stepped in a frozen river. So it was pretty, you know, pretty cold. Must be late in the year. Of course, we're up in the mountain anyway, so it wouldn't have to be that late, but late enough.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think there was still enough foliage in everything. I could never get a glimpse of it. Or, you know, it was a little further back than I thought, maybe, but I never got a glimpse of it. I thought for sure, though, as soon as I ran out of that path onto that road and turned to the right, it was going to come right through and get me. But it never did, and it must have stopped right there. I didn't look back but once or twice once I passed that point to see if it came out, and it never came out, at least not while I ran down that hill and hooked around on the other part of the forest road back the other way.
All right, now you're 12 years old. You have this rather frightening encounter. What did you, at 12 years old, think this was?
You know, I had seen, I guess, you know, the Patterson film by that time. I actually saw it at the movies. I didn't know if that's what it was, but I knew it wasn't a cat that they had been scaring me with.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think it was a bear, because it really sounded like the footfalls of 2 feet. And I know bears will charge through the woods and knock down small trees and brush as they go. But, you know, this thing was moving slow at first and then hard. And a bear, I don't think, would stalk me like that. It, you know, if it wanted me or the dogs, it wouldn't have waited that long. It could have had me.
Mm-hmm.
Could have had me.
So what did you were thinking, this must be Bigfoot?
No, I didn't really think anything. I got back to the truck. It was further down the road. I climbed in the back of my dad's truck, and back of the pickup, he had a cap on there, done up a little inside, but nothing. It was rough. It was still more a utility truck than a camper. And
mm-hmm.
I played with the dogs for a little while. I didn't go in that house and call the lady. I didn't do anything but sit right there and wait for my father. I laid down and didn't look out the window at first. I get in the truck, I get in there with the dogs, and I laid in the back, and I just didn't look out the window for a little while. Then I sat up, and I looked out a little bit, and I could see the house right there where the dogs had come from. The dogs, after a little while, wanted to get out of the truck, so I let them out, and I just stayed right in the truck until my dad came. And when he came, the first thing he said was, "What the hell are you in the back of the truck for? The truck's open." And I, excuse my vernacular, but so, you know, I jumped back in the front of the truck with him, and he started it up, and we warmed the truck up for a while, and he left. The dogs never came back out. I figured the daughter or the whoever was in the house probably brought them in. And, you know, we warmed up the truck, and he drove back to where he was meeting his buddy, who was in his pickup truck. We were staying in a hotel together, but separate motel, but separate.
All right, did you ever tell him what had happened?
Not yet. Not
mm-hmm.
yet. I didn't, and it was a little bit of a ride. We weren't at a location hunting where they had planned on going hunting. So they had a little bit of a ride to get back to wherever they had to go. And I sat there the whole way. And as you can tell, I like to talk a little bit. And my dad would be constantly saying, you know, I don't know, what are you asking for? Be quiet, you know? And I didn't talk the whole way back. I didn't say a word. I didn't say anything. I actually thought he'd be mad at me for being scared.
So
and then I thought he'd be like, you know, you're just trying to get your mother mad at me because I let you walk out of the woods by yourself. And of course I wouldn't be doing that. If anything, the opposite, be, you know, proud that he let me. And so I didn't say a word. And he kept, finally, after a while, he's like, what the hell's wrong with you? And excuse my language, but that's the way he said it. You know, what's the matter? You know, and the first thing he says, are you mad at me? And I'm like, no. And he's like, well, what's the matter? And I just said nothing. I was just cold. And he's like, well, you could have gotten the truck. And finally, we met his friend, and we went to the restaurant for our dinner, the same breakfast, for, you know, like a little diner that you would see on the road back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And we sat there having dinner, and I told my father's friend's son who was with us. So it was my dad and his buddy and his son, who was 2 years older than me. And I told him what had happened, and he told his dad. His dad told my father. My father, I remember I was playing the pinball machine, and he called me over, and, you know, I'm almost done. No, get over here now. And I told him exactly what happened, and he said it was just a bear following you out of the woods. Don't worry about it. It was a bear. Anything else, you know, and it couldn't break the trees. It had to be a bear. So then, you know, and he was kind of doing the, you know, don't be a sissy thing. Stop worrying about it. And the lady that owned the restaurant asked what we were talking about. And he told her. And she says, oh, that's just Big Ben. Big Ben followed Alex out of the woods, making sure he's okay. And then as people came in, she'd say, you know, Alex saw Big Ben today. And they acted like it was something that, you know, maybe not that happens all the time. But
it was just no big deal to them.
Kind of no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And whether, I don't know if they were doing that so my father would stop picking on me, or if that was really the way it was, you know. But I didn't feel like they were doing it like my father was picking on me. And he could be kind of intense sometimes, but at this time he really wasn't, you know. But, you know, you get with some people and they're like, oh, be nice, and you know, and so the next morning we were going to go hunt in the same location again. It was our last day there, and that lady asked me if I wanted one of the puppies. So of course, you know, can I have one, Dad? And he's like, of course. So she gave me one of the puppies that had followed me, and we went hunting in that same location again, and we went up a different path, and the dogs didn't follow us. They made sure the dogs didn't follow us. And all day long, I could only think of the day before and what could it have been, and what is Big Ben? And my dad and his friend didn't really bite at what it was. And afterwards, I'd ask my dad, you know, what do you think they meant? And he's like, oh, they're just joking. There's no such thing, you know. And don't you act like an idiot and tell people it's anything else, you know, and this and that. And for a long time, he wouldn't even talk to me about it. And he still really don't like talking about it, and won't tell me. He won't say anything that, like, I think what it was. You know, he just constantly says it's a bear.
Well, a lot of people do this. It seems to be sort of a human trait that when anything happens that we truly don't understand. A lot of people feel like it's necessary to fill in that blank with something that they do understand, whether that fits the blank or not. And they'll say, well, I mean, good example from the field of ufology. It's swamp gas or it's weather balloons or, you know, when everybody that was looking at it, and there maybe were 500 people looking at it, knows for sure it wasn't swamp gas, weather balloons, or flares, you know. But some people feel the urge to fill in the blanks with nonsense instead of just saying, well, I don't know. Okay, so you got involved in the research of cryptology, kind of spurred that direction by this early experience in your life. We got about a minute here before we hit the next break. So let me ask you this. As you have researched cryptology, or cryptozoology, here in Arizona, have you gotten any reports of Bigfoot in Arizona?
You know, Arizona has turned into a hotbed. There's been 28 reports in Arizona, and that's not including the ones that my team had, because we don't report them to the BFRO. But the major data center for Bigfoot across the United States is considered the BFRO. And if you go by their stats, there's been 28 sightings since 2005 in Arizona. But that's not counting the two Class A sightings that I've had, and that my partner and friend Mitch, his individual sighting that I know of. And you've had many more Class B sightings.
All right, we have to step away for a break, and we'll be back, folks, right after this. Don't go away. We're talking with Alex Hearn this evening. Alex is the director of the Arizona Cryptozoological Research Organization. And Alex, you were telling us that Arizona has become somewhat of a hotbed for Bigfoot sightings.
That's correct. I think it has a lot to do with just so many more people here. I think it's probably always been this way. It's people don't realize how heavily forested Arizona is when you get just away from the city, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's the largest single outcropping of ponderosa pine in the world. We have what we call the Mogollon Rim up in the north, runs basically from into New Mexico past Flagstaff, and basically what it is, it's where two tectonic plates come together and they basically form a cliff. And, you know, whether they're still active or not, that part I don't know, but that at some point you can see with the face of the upper plate. It's called the Mogollon Plateau, and in this area there's so many heavily forested areas with no homes for miles that it's just as thick up there as it is in the Pacific Northwest.
All right, now you mentioned Class A sighting. What is a Class A sighting? What does that mean?
Well, according to the BFRO, Class A sighting is a sighting where there's clear visual contact. Not you saw the creature in the trees and could barely see him. You know, usually going to be broad daylight and you're going to be able to see pretty clearly. a Class B sighting, might be a visual sighting too, but you couldn't really tell for sure that what you saw was a creature, maybe. It's hidden by trees. Could be a vocalization, could be a hearing some noises and then go checking it out and that's some footprints. Anything to that effect would be considered a Class B sighting.
Okay, so you've had two Class A sightings, is that what you said?
That's correct.
In Arizona?
In Arizona, in the last 2 years.
All right, describe one for us.
Well, the first one was in 2008, and I was on an AZCRO outing expedition. We were checking out some reports that we had gotten in the area. It was our third time in this area, and we'll go in, we'll spend anywhere from 2-3 days to a week in an area. When it gets hot out, if I can get away for a night and have to come right back, I'll do it. But in this case, I was with a crew, and it was still some of our party that hadn't shown up yet. Not everybody can come in for the full stay. So it was a Saturday night, and I was waiting for my good buddy Vic. And it was getting towards dusk, and I was getting kind of worried about him. You know, within an hour, it was going to be getting dark. So I said, you know what? Anybody got a hammer and a nail? I got a pad. I got a marker. I got a fluorescent marker. I'm going to write a note for Vic, you know, like you do when you go camping. Only in this location, we're not really talking campgrounds like you would think.
Yeah, we understand. It's rough country.
It's rough country.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no, you know, signs, sign boards to nail your sign on. So I get a hammer and nail from somebody. I get the paper and I write out a note. And basically it just says AZCRO this way, Vic this way. And it points to the road because at the time the road was rather new for all of us, especially this guy hadn't been there yet. So I walk. Everybody else is having dinner and relaxing. We've had a hard day all day investigating in another location. We're back at base camp. Right after we got at base camp, a few things had been happening. I'll tell you about that later if you like. But at this point, everybody's tired, and I, you know, probably shouldn't have done this alone. I said, you know, I'm just going to walk out a ways to the road and walk up the road a ways because there's a sign that points to the road, but I wanted to put another sign before that so he'd be ready for the second sign. And I walked down a couple hundred yards and did that. And there was another camper there. And his name's Jerry. And he's a local businessman. I won't say his business, but he lives in the area. And he was camping there with his kids. And he had his ATV going. And he was about 100 yards, 200 yards down the road, running his kind of homemade ATV, so it was rather loud. And I said hi to him and went off and nailed my sign on a tree or a board, a pole, and one of the forest signs. I nailed the sign on. I probably shouldn't admit to that, but that's what I did. And never realizing, it sounds basically just like the wood knocking that we do. And we had been having activity all day in the camp. We didn't have much activity in the location we were searching. When we got back to camp, we had a little activity. But I'm not really thinking like that at the time. I'm just thinking about putting this sign out for Vic and having something to eat. So I'm walking back after I nailed the sign on the pole, and I heard something to my left, and I realized it was because Jerry and his ATV stalled out. And I heard something to my left. I turned to my left, and in broad daylight, walking through the edge of the road, right off of Route 288 in Arizona, I'm not going to tell you exactly where, but somewhere south of Young, Arizona, not your 8-foot creature, not brown, it was an orange, it was a brown, orangey, red color. And it took about two steps, and I'm I stopped dead in my tracks looking right at it. And it clicked a couple of branches on the ground. And, you know, you could hear the twigs break as it stepped. And I'm watching it as it's doing it. And I'm watching its arms. It was, with its arms, it was pushing the branches up out of its way. And it would walk forward. And it made a couple of noises with the branches. And I could see it almost like say, hey, that was kind of noisy to itself, something to that effect. And I knew it was going to look right at me because it realized I could hear it, and that's exactly what it did.
How tall was
it?
Right
in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
How tall was it, Alex?
Well, I've gone back to this location many times. The road there is pretty equal to the slope, and it was only slightly taller than me. So maybe 6.5 feet tall. And it did have a crest. It had a puff on its head that looked like a lot of fur. I don't know if it was a sagittal crest, but it definitely had a puff on its head. But now here's the thing that was different about this sighting. From that puff of hair up on its head, the hair continued down its back. And it had almost, the only way I can describe it, and there's only been one other person that told me he's heard of this before, and that was a person I think you've had on your show, J.C. Johnson.
Yes.
It had a mane down its back. And that the hair coming off of its head was long. And it seemed to continue down its back, and the hair on its back seemed to be longer in the middle, kind of like, almost like a mane. And when, after it looked at me, it literally raised its eyebrows, you know, and the old god or old crap or whatever look, and kind of jerked its head back, and I could feel its nerves when it did that. I almost felt like it was speaking to me, but not speaking to me, like speaking to itself, but I could almost hear it thinking.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back after this, and very shortly, we'll open the telephone lines for you. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest, Alex Hearn. Alex, when we went away for break, and folks, we'll open the telephone lines for you in just a moment. They're not open yet. Alex, when we went away for break, you were telling us about this Class A sighting that you had right here in Arizona. It's of a Bigfoot, about 6.5 feet tall. How much do you think this thing weighed?
You know, that's the striking part. It wasn't as muscular as everybody says. It wasn't really as muscular as the creature you see in the Patterson film, which I'm not so sure is real. It's not as big as the creatures you see in drawings and...
What do you think? Maybe it was
on
an ad.
My website.
You think maybe it was an adolescent, maybe a teenager?
That's exactly what we think it is. Probably a younger female. We're thinking it was a female, the long hair. I didn't really understand that right away, but we're thinking it was a female, and maybe a younger one, maybe just a young adult, and you know, just watching us for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And
now when it looked at you, you know, now some people will connect with this because they are animal lovers and they have animals. Some people will not connect with this. There is a look that animals have in their eye when there's intelligence there and they're thinking. I have never seen that. I've been around cows a lot when I was growing up. I never saw that in a cow. I've seen that in dogs. I've seen it in cats. I've seen it in gorillas at the zoo. Never met a gorilla outside the zoo, but I have seen gorillas in the zoo that had that intelligent look, like they were really thinking something over, you know. So when this thing looked right into your eyes, did you see, did you sense intelligence there, or is this just a dumb animal?
No, I really sensed almost speech. I could almost understand what it was thinking. And it was, you know, basically what I tell everybody, and I don't know if I could say that on the air.
Well, if you doubt it, don't.
But it said, you know, oh, he sees me. And that's exactly what I heard. You heard, like, in my mind. And its eyebrows raised, and it looked, you know, it had already looked right at me. Oh, crap, he sees me, and that's not what came to my mind. And, you know, whether it, I don't think it speaks our language. I think somehow, you know, I turned what it was showing me into what I would say, I think, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically an, oh, my God, he sees me.
And did it run away?
It immediately turned its back to me, and it did the chopping motion with its arms that I told you about, and it ran away directly straight away from me where it was paralleling me right before that.
So and so it ran into the woods
for a couple of seconds.
Okay, so it ran into the woods, right?
Yeah, it ran directly perpendicular away from me into the woods. And Jerry on his ATV, he caught a glimpse of it too, because he yelled down to me, what was that? And he's, you know, 100 yards away or so. And he just said, what was that? And I said, I don't know. Did you see it too? And he just looked at me. And he got his little kid who was on another ATV, and they went back to their trailer. Now, he knows why we were up there, and he asked us not to say it in front of the kids. So when I said that, I guess he knew what I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
He packed up two little kids and went to his trailer. He had a RV there. And didn't see them again that night. The next morning, they packed up and left. Not that he was afraid. I'm sure of it. He wasn't the type. I just don't think he wanted us talking to him about what it was. And
okay, now you,
I stood there a couple seconds. Go ahead.
You said this was your first Class A sighting, and we want to get into the second Class A sighting here in just a moment, but I want to open up the telephone lines now in this second hour to our audience, because I know that there are folks in the audience that would like to join the conversation. So, folks, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. If you're in the USA or if you're in Canada, we do have a toll-free number. If you can call me without it costing you for long distance, then please use 623-444-5889. But if you need to call me on toll-free, we have a toll-free number in the USA and Canada, 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and Canada, you're not in Canada, you're not in the USA, unfortunately, there are no international toll-free lines available to me. Therefore, they're not available to you. But you can call me if you wish at 623-444-5889. We'd be more than happy to take your call. Or you can use our flash message option on the website. You just go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and scroll down, and right underneath Alex's picture, you will see a link that says Flash Message. If you click that, you can send me your question or your comment, and I'll read it on the air, and we'll talk about it. All right, so the phone lines are open if you have a question or a comment. And I know there are a lot of folks around the world This is not just something for the United States. There are people around the world that have seen these creatures. In some places, they call them Yeti. Some call them Sasquatch. Some call them Alma. Some call them Howie or Yowie. Yeah, not Howie, Yowie. But it's, you know, it's the same type of creature. Sometimes a little bit different description, but basically the same type of creature. And they've been seen all over the world. So let's go to the telephone and let's see. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Stefan in Quebec City, Kevin.
Hi, Stefan.
Hello. I was wondering, I'm sorry, what is your guest's first name?
Alex.
Alex. Alex, I was wondering, when you saw that creature on in that instance, what makes you think that its intelligence didn't equal or surpass ours?
Well, I never said it didn't, actually. We pretty much think they're highly intelligent, and out in the woods, probably they are more intelligent than you and I. We've had unbelievable things happen at that location. We've gotten footprints, we've gotten scat, we've had sound recordings of all different kinds, from growls to whoops to yells to what sounds like coyotes, but something different. So we're not sure that all these sounds are coming from them, but we've had where we can, these sounds kind of triangulate themselves around us, and you'll hear the movement, but yet you can tell that we're in the middle. So what they're doing is they're surrounding us, but they're paying attention to us because we're the centerpiece of their attention. And not saying that like we always are, just this is what's happened on a few occasions. And
well, the reason why I asked that, Alex, is because, you know, like, I've lived in mountain lion and wolf country my whole life, and I've never seen either one. I've seen one mountain lion once for about 2 seconds. And
you know,
hunters actually kill mountain lions and wolves all the time. So, you know, if
you
haven't
get out
turned up one of its corpses,
you gotta
yet, well...
You got to be real lucky to see a mountain lion or a bear. I'm up on this location in Seligman on a person's property, and he's a great guy. His name's Larry, and he's got me up there because he had an incident. And I've been in and out of there with him, without him. I got a key. I can go up anytime I want. Well, I'm heading up there one time, and he's already up there, and it's about 12 miles in. And I pull off about the fifth mile of the dirt road onto another dirt road, turning into that road. Mountain lion runs right across the road in front of me. Larry's lived here 37 years. He's yet to see a mountain lion. I'm going on his property. I've been here 5-6 years, and I see that mountain lion. A couple weeks later, we're hiking through his canyon, down his wash, and I look up on the top of the cliff, and there's a mountain lion looking right down on top of him and Rob, who I was walking with. They were walking together. I was a little behind him. And
yeah, so obviously whatever you saw is smarter than a mountain lion.
I would say. You know, we don't know for sure. And nothing's factual. Nothing's written in stone. We're learning every day. We don't know. We don't totally know everything that's going on. We're just kind of living it every day and learning every day and trying new things and seeing what works. But they're definitely intelligent creatures. We think they can even see the infrared red spectrum that the stealth cameras put off. So we have guys that are working on ways to trip those cameras that don't use that infrared sensor.
All right, Stefan, thanks for the call. Interesting question. You know, I have, I had a man from, I believe he is from Oklahoma that talked with me, this was several years ago, and, he said that these things, he has a place there in Oklahoma where he said virtually any night that you want to go out and see Bigfoot, you can. And he said that he sat and watched them, and they carry on conversations with each other, but not language like you and I use. They make sounds and converse with each other and seem to understand those sounds. What do you think? You think that's possible?
Well, I definitely think that's possible. We have, and I haven't heard this for myself, so I can't be sure, but we have some people that have reported to us that sometimes it sounds like they're trying to repeat words and maybe can't do it so good. But sometimes they'll hear sounds that sound like the same words they were talking about earlier. And I don't mean an echo, because we all know what echoes are. But they'll hear like a growl in a voice, and they'll say, you know, it's almost trying to say whatever they were talking about. So that's quite possible. And, you know, if they're a humanoid, great article on my AZCRO Facebook site about Neanderthal man actually mating with regular man. And, you know, maybe that's what these creatures are. Maybe these are a cross between both species. You know, people don't realize that 600,000 years ago.
Yeah, Alex, I don't know what you're doing, but sometimes you just get really muffled and we can barely hear you. Your volume goes way away.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I paid a lot of money for this cell phone, and I don't think it's as good as it should have been.
Well, cell phones are broadcast hell. They always are. Okay, now, let's talk about this second sighting that you had that was a Class A. When did that happen, and basically, where did it happen?
That happened in the White Mountains of Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
On the Apache Reservation. And I'm lucky enough to be associated with the Bigfoot hunter, Tom Biscotti, and he's one of the only crews allowed officially on the White River Apache Reservation. So when he goes up there, he'll call me and say, Alex, do you want to come? And I've been up there a couple of times with him, and I've been up there a couple of times without him on behalf of him.
Mm-hmm.
All the photos from those trips are available on my website also.
What year was it?
The sighting with him was June of last year, 2009.
Mm-hmm.
Up there twice this year already. Once in 2010. But AK's up there following through on sightings, and he was recently on one of the major news channels in Phoenix.
What happened in this Class A sighting?
In the Class A sighting, we had a large group, and we were going in, I won't say the road, it's private property anyways, but it's right off of Route 260,
mm-hmm.
and it's on the Apache Reservation, private property. So we get in there, we got about four trucks. We got my vehicle, we got Tom's vehicle, I got a couple of guys with me, he's got a couple of guys in his truck, and then we got the two trucks from the Apache Reservation that are showing us the location, and they're loaded with people too. And what we're planning on doing is they're going to show us a location where there was a sighting, we're going to talk to the people that had the sighting, and then we're going to leave a small crew there, that would be me, and we're going to, you know, investigate the sighting overnight, probably for a couple of nights at least, and, you know, go back there if we have to. So we're on our way in, and just so happened to be another 15-mile dirt road in off of the 260, and about halfway in, and this trip got started a little late, so it's already dark, and we're driving in slow, private road, deep into the mountain, and out comes, you know, you drive with the windows down, you're driving very slow. You can't go on some of these roads, you can't go but 5, 10, 15 miles an hour anyways. And these ones aren't even like the roads up on the rim where you can go 20, 30 miles an hour. The private, poorly kept, you know, we're crawling, all four vehicles, and you hear this loud howl from the right, and then another one from the left. And the hill went up to the right and down to the left. So all four vehicles hit the brake. Tom Biscotti gets out. He says, okay, this sounds like, you know, maybe two creatures, one on the right, one on the left, and they're, you know, one of them's telling the other ones that we're here. So, are you there?
Yes, we're listening.
Okay. Sorry about that. That's that Dan Holm phone.
Okay, so you have two creatures that, one that howled to the right, one to the left. What did you see?
So he deployed us out, me, Rob, and Steve to the right, the local guys to the left, and him and his partner go down the middle of the road. They got a thermal imager. We all got heat seekers and night vision. Yeah, and me, Rob, and Steve fan out about 50 to 100 yards apart from each other. And we're walking down towards the same direction we were driving. And Steve thinks he gets something on his heat seeker. And Steve is a friend of mine from Kentucky. He was out here investigating with us. Rob is from Alabama, and he was doing the same. Both associates of Tom Biscotti and friends of mine. So we're heading, kind of fanning out, trying to kind of tactically get around whatever we saw. And Steve thinks he saw something, but he's not sure. So he calls me and Rob in. We all got Motorola radios. We come in, we're looking at what Steve saw, and we're all seeing something on the night vision that looked like it ducked behind a tree. But Tom was not picking anything up on the thermal at this time from the road down below, and we're 100, 150 yards above them, something to that effect, and it could be a little less. It's hard to judge distance in the forest. So we stare for a while and finally don't think there's anything there anymore, or there never was. So Rob and I fan out again. I leave Rob and continue up the top of the hill, so I'm the furthest away from everybody. I caught a glimpse of something with my night vision sneaking from one tree to another. And I stared and I stared and I stared. And the night vision, monocular, they're a single eye. And you kind of don't trust it when you can't see what you think you're supposed to be seeing. So I took it down, and luckily it was great. It was a full moon. And whatever I was looking at, without the night vision, stepped out behind the tree and looked right at me. And again, it was not a big one. This one was even smaller than the first one. Couldn't really tell height. It might have been my height, might have been a little higher, might not have been. But it was thin, wiry looking, but you could see the fur. And it swayed back and forth like you would see a chimp or a gorilla do. And like it was, what I was always thinking was that it was undecided which tree should it go back behind and which way should it run. But it stood there doing it for what seemed like a few minutes. And then Tom came over the radio and he said, Alex, I got you on the thermal. We can see you clear as day. We can see your legs. We can see your shorts, and we can see your T-shirt, so we know it's you. I was the only one still in shorts. And the guys will tell you I wear shorts a lot out in the field, unless I really think I need to cover my legs. And he says, and I can see something above you that does not have any shorts and T-shirt on and is much larger. And I said, right in front of me? And he said, no, above you. So to your right and slightly behind you. So now I turn that way, and as I do turn that way, I hear something in the bushes or trees, and I start chasing it. And I had a smaller one right in front of me, but I start going towards whatever Tom told me was there, and I start, you know, trying to catch it, trying to see it. And the forest wasn't that thick, but it was night, so I tried running as fast as I could. There was still a lot of dead wood on the ground, so I didn't go down, but I wasn't moving anywhere near as fast as, you know, you would normally move. And whatever it was, I could hear it getting farther and farther away from me. And then it stopped. So I kept going. And when I, you know, eventually, I guess, got a little closer to it, it started running again. And I could hear it, you know, take off. And Tom and the guys are all calling on the radio, Alex, what are you doing? Alex, what are you doing? Get back here. You know, what are you doing? And finally, I stopped. I wasn't going to catch it anyways. So I got back there, and I told them what happened. And, you know, they were like, what did you think you were going to do? You know, but I wanted to see it. That's what I wanted to do. I wasn't, I didn't want to be dumbfounded again like I was a year earlier. And I didn't want to be considered a chicken. So I was off after it. But the Class A sighting was the sighting right in front of my eyes with the smaller one.
All right, we have to take a break, and let me ask our caller who is on hold. Do you want to hang on through the break?
Sure.
All right, hang in there. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back. My guest this evening is Alex Hearn. And Alex, let's go straight to the telephone. Caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin from Beaverton.
Okay, Kevin.
Alex, I was wondering if a Bigfoot could imitate an animal call or growl to ward off trackers or people because they may have observed humans avoiding such calls in the past.
Alex, are you there?
I am. I wasn't sure if he was done yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, we think that they definitely imitate sounds. Whether they're smart enough to do it to scare you away because they've heard other animals do it, I don't know. We definitely think that when there's hunters around or when you have a weapon, they seem to know and try to stay away. You're much less likely of seeing one if you have a weapon, at least in the areas we'd go. And that's, you know, whether that, nothing we know is certain, but that's certainly the way it seems. Even wondered if they could smell the steel. But we definitely think they imitate sounds, and we definitely think they imitate people and animals. So I think the answer is yes.
Okay, Kevin, thank you for the call. We have a flash message here from Peter in Columbia. He says, have you discovered any connections between UFOs and cryptozoology? And if so, what can you share? Also, do you have any cases of creatures arriving or departing through portholes or wormholes?
Well, you know, on the reservations, they believe that the creatures are supernatural and can come and go as they please. You know, could that be maybe a way that in years and years past they would have assumed was happening if an alien beamed down a Bigfoot, or, you know, Spock and Scotty beamed down themselves, would they think that they were a god? Or I'm sure they would. So that could be the answer to that story. We have many people in Arizona that believe there is a connection. I'm not so sure. But that don't mean I'm right either. There's a one of the oldest researches, longest time researches in Arizona, has that exact theory. And a friend of mine, and I won't say his name, has a picture that he claims is a Bigfoot in the foreground and an alien in the background holding some kind of lance or weapon, almost like they were making the Bigfoot do some work. And everybody knows that's another theory. The locations that I had my first sighting, there's 15 uranium mines in that area. So is there a reason for that theory? Quite possibly.
All right, to the telephone caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and to the bottom of the list. All right, we have a flash message from Tony in Australia. He says, "Hi, Kevin. My comment to Alex is, I'm in your camp, mate. I have seen these creatures on more than one occasion. They have the smarts of a human. We call them over here the Yowie. And yes, they do see an infrared, and they also use infrasound when they need to remove humans from their land. They're 100% real, Kevin. Thanks, mate." And that's Bob from Australia. All right, to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
How you doing, Kevin? This is Sam from Lake Havasu City.
Hi, Sam.
How you doing? Alex, question for you. You know, I'm big on the research end of it, and I know there's something going on in the woods everywhere. And what I'm a little bit concerned about with is with all these researchers taking all these photos that are horrible with today's photo technology, even with an inexpensive digital camera, you can blow up any photo to get extreme detail, and I'm wondering why every photo is horrible and looks photoshopped, and they look layered, and they just don't look. I'm not buying it, and I'm wondering why when people go out and do expeditions, your expeditions, the ones that you've done, why doesn't anybody have a video camera? Why doesn't anybody tape any of these sightings? Or when you're going back and forth on the radio, why isn't that on a video camera or some sort of sound capture so other people can hear it? I mean, they do that on Ghost Channel, you know, shows.
Okay, well, let's give him a chance to answer.
Yeah.
Well, when we go out, I carry four or five video cameras with me. I have an HD camera, I have a regular video camera, and then I have, you know, digital cameras that are, of course, also video cameras. And then we'll have stealth cameras, too, that we leave out in designated locations, usually high up in a tree, not always. And we do have tons of video on the AZCRO forum site where we post all the data and we discuss it. So there's tons of video there. There's tons of sound files.
But specifically, why are there no clear videos of these sightings where, like you described, the first Class A sighting? People see these creatures, but when we do see video of them and we do see pictures of them, they're always grainy, fuzzy, out of focus. Why is that?
I don't know. I certainly don't have a good photo yet myself. That night, it wasn't quite night yet. I was without a camera. We were walking to put up a sign, just myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a beer in one hand, and I had a hammer and note in the other hand, and I did not have my camera with me. The night with Tom Biscotti, a camera probably wouldn't have helped unless I had the night vision camera hooked up. And a couple of the guys do have that. I do not. For the other photos, the ones that look like they're photoshopped and the ones that look like they're layered, well, you know the answer. They usually are. And, you know, I was talking to a good researcher last night. I won't say a friend because he's a new friend, but he said, you know, 60% of the stuff is just fake, 30% is crap, and the other 5 or 10% you got to find, and it's real. And
yeah, and I agree with that. And but I'm just thinking that, I mean, with all this time and researching, I mean, I'm not even a researcher, but if I was going out on a research program looking for Bigfoot, I would never leave my truck without the camera. It would be rolling all the time because it's bad research if you're going out and, oh, we missed another one, and we missed another one. Oh, we weren't prepared. I mean, is anybody ever going to be prepared? That's all I'm saying. I mean, it seems like all these opportunity.
It's that, you know, Bushnell had $1 million reward. I think it's been about a year and a half since it ended. For a year, if you could get a without a doubt picture, they would give you $1 million, whether you took it with their camera or not. And nobody claimed the prize, so you're 100% right. It's an elusive creature, it's smart, and like I said, even with the stealth cameras, we think it can see the infrared because they very rarely trip the stealth cameras. Something will trip them, but you don't catch them in there. They do have a slight delay, but, you know, we've tested them ourselves, and it always catches ourselves. Now, we do have some pretty decent video on the website from, on the forum, from Mitch. And at one night, he had something walk around his camp, and he got a pretty good video of it. But it's at night, so it just looks like, you know, a shadow. I sent some friends to that same camp location, and the young lady woke up through the night and heard something walking around her tent and walk up the hill just last weekend. So why people don't get pitches, I don't know, but it's not that easy.
Okay, Sam, I want to thank you for the call. Very good observations. 623-444-5889. That's the main number here. And if you are in the USA or Canada, you can call me on the toll-free number if you need to call me on toll-free. It is 888-223-4599. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. It's Mike from Kentucky.
Hello, Mike.
Alex, have you ever heard one of these things sort of growl, sort of kind of like a low, real low bassy growl?
I spent a night by myself, a Wednesday night in 2008, August, early September, on the edge of Aztec Peak, and actually did a call into a radio show from there. After the show, that's the person that runs the show calling me, sorry about that. I called into the show, did the show, the hour, and then I went down in what I was going to use for camp that night. Set up the back of my truck and grilled some sausage, and I was going to sit down and eat a couple of sausage and go to bed and get up the next morning and either do some investigating in that location or go up in another location. And I no sooner finished the sausages and got ready to sit down, and it was a low but deep roar more than a growl, and it vibrated through my chest. I got in my truck, rolled up the windows, left my equipment outside. I didn't leave, but I didn't get my equipment either, and sat in my truck and finished those sausages and sat there for a little while before I got out and fished through the cooler for another drink, a cold drink, and then I got in my truck and I sat there the rest of the night. That low, guttural growl was the scariest sound I ever heard. I told the story many times on the website and the forum, and others have heard the same sound. It was like the Bigfoot sound that you hear in the old Peter Graves mystery, History's Mysteries show, and it was very guttural, loud, and echoing. At this point in the canyon, I'm just to the south side of Aztec, and whatever it would growl that loud would echo, and it did. And it growled and yelled and echoed right through me. I tell people it literally vibrated inside my chest. It was so loud. And it was directly aimed at me. I was sitting on the edge of an apple orchard. We'd gotten some sightings reports from, and I was going to just sit there all night and watch the apple orchard in my truck. I wasn't going to set up a tent. I was all by myself. I was just going to camp in my truck. I use it like an RV. It's a Durango. And I was just going to spy this apple orchard all night, and that's what happened.
Okay. We were doing some research in Western Kentucky here.
Mike, you got 15 seconds.
And one of the researchers said he heard a growl, and I didn't hear it. And the other one said, yeah, he heard it. But then after we had decided to leave, as we were walking away, I heard that growl.
Mike, thanks for the call. A break has taken over. We have to step away for a minute. And we'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back. We're on Final Approach now, and the telephone lines are open. But if you're going to get a shot at talking to our guest this evening, you have to call like right now because time will run out. And we have a flash message, Alex, from the United Kingdom. This is from Ross, and he says one theory could be that these big feet or Bigfoots are genetically constructed beings that do the ET's physical work, along the same lines as human origins, but with slightly lesser intelligence and abilities. Maybe the ones people see have escaped. Just thinking out loud. What do you think about that? Are you with us, Alex?
That is definitely one of the theories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, That's exactly the theory that some people have with Bigfoot. I myself am not so sure, but I'm open to anything. And if it's possible, then I guess it could be possible. You know, here in Arizona, we call the animal, I don't think anybody's mentioned this all night, we call the creature the Mogollon Monster. And he has been known for over 100 years. There's even a story of the locals burning down the Escadilla Mountain. They thought they had a creature trapped, you know, above them, burning the mountain from below to the top.
All right, let's go to the telephone. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, John from Vancouver Island.
Hello, John.
Hi. Hi, Alex.
How you doing, Tom? You're in the heart of Bigfoot country.
I think you're onto something because, you know, you keep running into these creatures, so you're doing something right.
Well, we believe that actually we have a pod in this location that we go. It's in the Sierra Enchiladas. And basically it's three small mountain ranges in the valley in between. So they're kind of landlocked in this location. They can escape to the north, but there was recently a fire. To the south and the east and the west, they'd really have to go through some desert to get out of there. And
I see.
So we think that it's a perfect area for them, and they've kind of used it as habitat year-round. Probably like what the creatures do in Vancouver Island. And some people wouldn't really realize it, but in this valley, it gets very tropical. This fern, the first year in there, we were all amazed how much it looked like a tropical rainforest compared to a heavily wooded forest that you see in Arizona. Excuse me.
Let me just put out what I think they might be.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, like I've heard about this for a long time. I've never seen one, but I'm thinking, like, how would you explain the existence of such a creature? And what occurred to me was, I think they're like the opposite. They represent the opposite of human choices that we humans have made. So, like, we've gone the tech route. We're really aggressive, that kind of thing. Well, I think they're a version of humanity that have gone the opposite way. They're not aggressive. Anything tech, they're not even going to remotely consider. So they're really closely aligned with nature. And possibly, they might even be able to shapeshift. That's what I'm surmising.
Well, there's a lot of people that have that opinion, too. And on the reservation, that's a theory and an opinion that a lot of the residents have. So it's quite possible. You know, Kevin, one thing I noticed, and just in case anybody's trying to get in touch with me, because you have people calling in from all over the world, is my website, I think we have wrong on the website. So if they need to get in touch with me, azcro.net, and you can use the website is www.azcro.net, and you can reach me by typing alex@azcro.net.
Okay, we'll get that changed.
Azcro.net.
Yeah, we'll get that changed, and it'll be up there, folks, as you know, for the next 24 hours until we do the next show. So right after the show, we'll get that changed. John, thank you for the call. You know, that certainly is one of the theories that not only people in general hold, but also it seems to be, you know, pretty prominent as a theory, both on the Apache and Navajo reservations. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin.
Hello.
How are you? This
good.
Is Tony.
Tony, you only have a short time because we're almost out of show. You'll have to hurry.
Or Terry from Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised this guy is involved with Tom Biscardi. All that stuff with that thing from Georgia and all the other stuff associated with Biscardi.
Okay.
He associated himself with Biscardi. That's all.
Okay, Tony. It you know, Biscardi does have quite a shadow over him since the Georgia hoax happened. How do you deal with that?
Well, you know what? I could tell you, we could do a whole show on that subject alone, but let me just say that Tom has been one of the greatest people to me. He's been nothing but wonderful to me. I'm sure he's probably going to call me right after the show. His partner, Java Bob, has called twice while I've been doing the show. He probably doesn't realize I'm doing it right now, so forgive me. But both of them have been great to me. I know the true story of what happened during the hoax, and, you know, come on, they got hoaxed. Tom goes all over the country searching for this creature. And someone from Georgia called him up and said, we got a body. He flew out there. He saw a block of ice with a body in it. You know, thought it was worth taking a chance on, and he paid them some money. His team took the body up to a safe house in Chicago, Illinois, excuse me. And Tom flew back to San Francisco with the two Georgia guys. And the team melted the creature, and it was a rubber suit. So how is that his fault, you know? The Georgia guys disappeared and haven't been seen since. You know, he was just trying to discover something just like I'm doing, and he got hoaxed. He didn't perpetuate the hoax. At least there's no proof that he did. And I don't think he's the type that would. So that's what I say. And he's never done nothing to me, so... why would I not be loyal to a man that's helped me?
Fair enough. All right, Alex, we are out of time. I want to thank you for being with me on the show this evening, and if you will, stay on the line with me for a moment as we bring the show to a close. But very quickly, give your contact information out again.
Excellent. Thank you, Kevin. Mm-hmm. The website is www.azcro.net. That one's under construction, so let me quickly give you the forum website. It's azcro.lefora.com. And that's our forum. That's where we're speaking about everything we do. That's where all the guys are, the whole team. You can join. You can chat. You can see everything we discover. It's there. And you can email me at either Alex or sightings at azcro.net.
All right. Alex, thank you. And as I said, just stay on the line with me for a moment as we bring the show to a close. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I've gotten lots of email from you recently from people saying, you know, why don't you talk about Bigfoot more? Well, it's hard to find anyone to talk about Bigfoot that really has much to say because most of the time they haven't been out there. They haven't been out there in the field. But Alex has, and we appreciate him being with us this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.